Author's Preface, Part 1. So how did you become a speaker? The most common question I receive from aspiring speakers is how I got started in professional speaking. It's also the number one question I receive from anyone I meet once they find out that I speak for a living. Not because people are interested in me per se, but because the profession of speaking sparks quite a bit of curiosity. It's not a career most people desire. In fact, speaking in public causes most people to panic and feel terrified. So when someone meets me and knows that I speak professionally, they usually ask lots of questions. My backstory of how I started in professional speaking is extremely important because it sets the tone for this entire book. I did not set out to speak professionally. I had no interest in speaking growing up. A wild variety of events occurred that led me to begin my speaking journey and to where I am today as a professional speaker. Moreover, I'm confident that you will identify with many of my experiences and connect with them for your own benefit. You'll be able to learn from the things I did well and not so well, which will help you build your own speaking business and hopefully avoid pitfalls along the way. I suffered from depression in my teenage years and was diagnosed with an eating disorder at just 12 years old. This was in the mid-1980s when the doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, teachers, and even my family had no real clue how to treat my condition and help me. Mental health back then was not nearly as understood as it is today, and treatment and services were not nearly as available either. I write much more about my depression and eating disorder experience in my book, Think Differently to Achieve Success. And I dedicate an entire chapter to that time in my life and how I recovered. Additionally, at 16 years old, I was arrested. This experience with the police would also change my life, and I share it in a chapter of Think Differently titled Lessons of Wisdom. Still to this day in my presentations, I share my teenage depression and arrest with audiences. After my speeches, people always tell me how much they appreciated and are connected to what I shared. And as you'll soon hear in this book, audiences connect more to struggle than strength. When they feel that a speaker is authentic and transparent, they pay more attention. I continued to struggle attending college. I remember being a first-year student and feeling so lonely. I kept my bags packed the first month because I didn't expect to make it. My roommate and I had nothing in common. I was in a long-distance relationship several hours away. I lacked self-confidence. I was still struggling through many aspects of my depression earlier in my life. I tried dropping out of college on numerous occasions, but the dean of students, Dean Terry, always convinced me otherwise and would never sign my withdrawal paperwork. I remember him saying to me, "Kevin, I'm technically required to sign these forms when students come to see me, but for some reason, I don't want to sign yours. I see something special in you. Will you let me help you and just give us another month?" Because I admired and respected Dean Terry, I always gave him another month. He always had ideas to help me, and most importantly, he just really seemed to care. In the beginning of my sophomore year, things began to change. I'd gotten more engaged on campus, had developed more confidence in myself, and I had a new roommate because the first one flunked out. I finally felt like I was fitting in. College would ultimately become transformational and help me discover aspects about myself I never knew existed, both personally and in my own leadership abilities. Not only did I excel academically with a near 4.0 GPA, but I excelled as a leader on campus as well, receiving awards like Greek Man of the Year, the Chancellor's Achievement Award, and Homecoming King. During my senior year, I was giving a campus tour to prospective students and parents when a life-changing awareness hit me. I wanted to be like Dean Terry to help other struggling students transition to college like I did. I realized that I wanted to work on a college campus. Although I was going to graduate with a marine biology degree a few short months later, I knew my future career would be taking a detour. This became my moment. At the age of 21, where I set a vision and career dream for becoming a dean of students. I would eventually work in student affairs at several different colleges and universities across the country. The University of South Carolina, University of South Florida, University of Central Florida, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and High Point University. Titles I served in included Assistant Director of Student Activities, Director of Orientation, Director of Greek Life, Director of Advising, and ultimately, the Dean of Students. In all these roles, I would frequently speak to student groups and be asked to facilitate workshops at conferences that I attended. I did not necessarily enjoy presenting to students, but I did it anyways because it was just part of my job. I never had any intention or desire of becoming a professional speaker early on. And when I did speak, I was never paid, nor did I ever even think about being compensated in any way. One particular conference in 2001 changed my life. I remember listening to the opening welcome remarks from the conference organizer. I do not remember what they shared, but I do recall them being extremely boring and looking as if they were having a panic attack. There was nothing engaging about the opening remarks, and frankly, it was painful to watch. If smartphones existed back then, I would have immediately been texting or checking my email. Once the conference organizer was finished with opening remarks, they introduced an opening keynote speaker by the name of Zig Ziglar. Music began to play. The energy skyrocketed and Zig took the stage. Within the first 30 seconds, I was laughing and giving high fives to people sitting around me. 1 minute later, I was on my feet, both giving and getting a back massage from the person sitting next to me. I kept thinking, this speaker is amazing. Zig commanded attention from me and that entire audience of 1,000 people for over an hour. What I remember most is relating to his stories, feeling inspired, and laughing constantly. Zig did not share any type of Mount Everest achievement or near-death experience that changed his life. He was just extremely good connecting with his audience, engaging us, and setting an incredible energy tone for the conference event. Halfway through his presentation, I heard a voice inside my head say, "You can do this, Kevin. You can speak like this. You can make an impact like this too." This inside voice made me feel good. It filled my chest with positive energy. Right then and there, my first seed of desire for becoming a professional speaker was planted because I was watching another great speaker. My heart felt like it was pumping rocket fuel. This feeling was something I had never experienced before. And when Zig finished, the audience responded with a standing ovation. I found Zig at his book signing table afterward, and I waited in line behind at least 50 people. When it was my turn to greet him, I said, "Thank you. You were incredible. I would love to talk with you about bringing you to my campus for a keynote presentation." Zig smiled and replied, "I'd be honored." Unexpectedly, the spirit moved me to keep talking, and I added, "How in the world did you get into speaking?" It had not been my intention to ask him about speaking. It somehow just came out of my mouth. "Meet me for coffee in the lobby when I'm finished here," Zig said. "I'd be happy to talk with you about speaking and answer any questions." Wow, my heart pounded with excitement. I cannot believe Zig Ziglar was going to talk with me. I was both honored and humbled. I didn't even know what questions to ask or where to start. I waited in the lobby for nearly an hour while he continued shaking hands and taking future speaking leads. Wow, I kept thinking, I can't believe he gets paid to speak. What a rush. What an impact. When Zig finally sat down with me, we spoke for nearly 30 minutes. He was just as authentic and amazing one-on-one as he was on stage. He gave me excellent tips about how to get started in speaking and how he commonly got speaking engagements like the one where I just saw him speak. Note, some of what Zig shared with me about how to get started as a speaker is the basis of what you will hear in this book. The most important tip Zig shared with me, though, was through a question. Zig asked, "Kevin, young man, there are two questions you'll need to answer in order to be successful as a speaker. What's your story? and how can it help people? What's my story? How can it help people? Okay. I don't know though, Mr. Ziegler. Zig replied, I think you have a few stories in you, even at your young age. I sense you have a real passion. And once you figure out what stories to use in order to help people, you'll be far ahead of most speakers. You see, great speakers are great storytellers with a purpose. Wow, I thought. Our time was short, so I sincerely thanked Zig for his time. He was gracious enough to take a picture with me, which would serve as a constant reminder of him and the time that he invested with me that day at the conference. I reflected on Zig's questions throughout that entire day and evening. The next morning, I facilitated my own breakout session at the conference. The session was my normal workshop, which I had presented several times in the past. However, I made a slight change to it this time. Incorporating Zig's advice about a personal story, I added a personal element to the workshop. I shared my story about how I lived the dream of meeting Bob Barker and being on the television game show, The Price is Right. Being on stage with Bob Barker had been a dream of mine since early childhood. After years of studying grocery prices, analyzing how to play games, arranging my class schedule in college around the show, and even skipping my college graduation to drive across the country to be on the show, I was finally able to achieve and live my dream of meeting Bob Barker and being on The Price is Right. I had never included this story in any previous presentation. I never really understood how meeting Bob Barker related to leadership or was relevant for my workshop. Although unique and funny, my story just seemed like a silly adventure. I did not realize how important it is for great speakers to also be great storytellers. Zig was exactly correct. Not only does a great story connect and engage an audience, but it also differentiates the speaker. The more unique your story, the more people will remember you for it, find you as authentic, and be engaged with the message carried by that story. Great speakers truly do have an ability to craft great speeches through great storytelling. Extremely nervous and apprehensive about adding my new 10-minute segment of winning on The Price is Right, I followed Zig's recommendations and included it. I used my story as an example connecting to the overall workshop message of, number one, having a clear vision for your dream in life, number two, developing an action plan around that vision, and then number three, never giving up to achieve it despite the adversity. My workshop ended up being a huge success. Attendees were more engaged and excited than ever before. Presenting it was also more fun for me than it ever had been as well. As attendees left the room, several stopped to thank me. Normally a few students would talk with me afterwards, but this time was different. There was a line of them waiting. I observed a young lady standing in the back of the room. She appeared shy and very uncomfortable. After making eye contact several times, I quickly realized she was waiting for everyone else to leave. I had a hunch there was something important she wanted to say to me. She finally approached me once the room had cleared, slightly shaking. "Mr. Snyder," she said with a tentative smile, "that was an incredible presentation." She paused and looked down. "Well, thank you. That's very kind," I replied. "What's your name?" "My name is Karen," she said. She paused again. I could sense she was struggling for words. A few moments later, she continued, "I want you to know that your presentation today really made an impact on me. It got me thinking." "Oh, really?" I said. "How so?" Something then triggered in Karen and she shut down. She took a step back and looked away. Her face turned slightly pale and I could tell she was extremely uncomfortable talking further. I felt there was more she wanted to share, yet she seemed conflicted on how to say what was really on her mind. "Just about stuff," she said. "I have a lot of stuff I'm dealing with right now." I noticed that both times she said the word "stuff," she looked away. Before I could ask her anything else, she turned to walk away. heading out the door. As she walked out, I called out, "Thank you, Karen." I felt I would hear from her again at some point. I was convinced there was more she wanted to tell me, and for a reason. I finished packing up my workshop materials and left the room. Later that day, I was standing in the conference hotel lobby. An older gentleman approached me with a smile and asked, "Are you the Price is Right guy?" The Price is Right guy, I thought to myself. I was confused. I had never even heard that phrase before. "The Price is Right?" I replied to him. Well, I was on the show not too long ago. How did you know?" He continued in an enthusiastic tone, "You made a presentation earlier today, didn't you? And you spoke about your dream growing up to meet Bob Barker and being on The Price is Right?" "That was me," I said, smiling. "Wow," he replied. "Let me tell you something. My students have been raving about you all day. I'm so glad I found you. My name is Mike. We have a student leadership conference in a few months, and we want you to be our keynote speaker. We'd love for you to share that same story." Mike didn't know it, but he had just given me my first keynote presentation opportunity. Trying not to seem the amateur I was by showing too much excitement, I smiled and replied, "That sounds amazing. I'd love that opportunity. Thank you, Mike. By the way, my name's Kevin." "Wonderful, Kevin. I'll contact you soon for more details, but just remember, we want to hear that Price is Right story that you shared today. Our students will love you." As we exchanged business cards, we made small talk for a few more moments. He then inquired, "Oh, one more thing. What's your speaking fee?" I felt like I'd been jolted with a mini bolt of lightning. "Uh-oh," I thought to myself, "my speaking fee? I don't even have a fee. I didn't expect this. What do speakers even charge?" I stuttered. "Mind if I get back to you on that? I just need a few more details first." Mike seemed a bit surprised I was not prepared to quote a fee. I'm confident at that point he sensed I was a newbie in the field of speaking. In fact, I'm sure that a vibe of speaker rookie was oozing from every pore in my body. "Sure thing, Kevin," he said. "We'll talk very soon." Mike then turned and walked away. I turned around and mentally jumped up and down, clicking my heels together. My first real speaking gig. Cannot believe it. I was thrilled. That day is still one of the happiest days of my life because it helped me open up a new door that would ultimately lead to where I am today as a professional speaker. But now, I also had a problem. Not only did I have to organize my workshop presentation into a keynote speech, which I had no clue how to do, but I also had to determine a fee and write a contract. Would I be engaging enough? Would I be good enough? What should I charge? How does travel work? I did not know where to start. Note, we'll be covering all these questions and more in this book. Throughout that evening at the conference event, random people kept approaching me with a smile and inquiring if I was the Price is Right guy. Although I must admit the attention was inspiring, it felt plain odd. I didn't expect any of this. Frankly, I wasn't sure I liked the nickname of the Price is Right guy. It did seem to stick well, though, and it was unique. The following morning, I checked my email. I had a message from Karen, the student from the previous day who was hesitant talking to me. Her message began with, "Dear Mr. Snyder, you probably don't remember me, but..." Of course I remembered her. In fact, I had hoped to hear from her. As I continued reading her message, my jaw dropped and a tear dripped down my cheek. She wrote that my presentation and story of being on The Price is Right inspired her to find a dream. For as long as she could remember, Karen suffered from depression, addictions, had been in and out of rehabilitation clinics and foster care homes, had been arrested. She continued writing about her challenges being bulimic and had attempted suicide on multiple occasions. Another tear rolled down my cheek when I read that she had attended the conference in order to commit suicide. She wanted to be in her own room and far away from anyone who could help her. She had tried committing suicide before by taking pills, but someone always found her and saved her life by calling an ambulance. Karen wrote, "Your presentation about living your dream got me thinking different about my own life. You gave me hope to find my dream. Kevin, you saved my life." I reread her message several times. I couldn't believe it. I saved her life? No way. Not my silly little story. I did not understand what was happening. How could my presentation have such an impact on someone? Also, Karen had no clue how much she and I had in common. You see, she did not know that I had dealt with very similar issues as she growing up. As you heard earlier, you know that I also suffered from depression through my teenage years. I was clinically diagnosed with an eating disorder, had run away from home a few times. I'd considered suicide on multiple occasions as well, even being arrested too. Karen had no clue about any of that. How could she? I didn't share it at my presentation. All I shared was my silly story of being on The Price is Right. What I immediately realized sitting alone in my hotel room was that whether by accident or by divine intervention, I had an opportunity to help people engaged in my presentations. I had the answer to Zig Ziglar's second question to me. How do I want to help people? By sharing my struggles from the past, I could use those experiences for good to encourage others. By revealing my pain and loneliness from having depression, perhaps other people wouldn't feel so alone. And by disclosing mistakes I had made in my past, like my arrest, I could empower others to learn from my teachable moments. Karen taught me that I needed to share even more in my presentations, not less. She showed me that people and audiences relate much more to struggle than strength. Karen gifted me that day by helping me understand the power of transparency, connection, and relatability, whether through speaking to audiences or in a one-on-one conversation. As speakers, when we share our stories of struggle and perseverance, our audience knows we've been tested and are more open to hearing what we did to get through it. Someone in the audience is dealing with a similar issue. After all, the audience assumes we are the expert and are speaking to them for a reason. We have command of the presentation, which means the audience expects us to inform and help them in some way. Our signature story crafted into a problem-solving professional speech will not only differentiate us, but it will also carry a powerful message that audiences will remember us for and recommend to others. I sincerely thanked Karen for her message and asked if she felt comfortable talking with me in the hotel lobby over coffee. During our conversation, I applauded her for demonstrating strength by sharing her story and talking with me. I also told her briefly about my own struggles and how she and I had much more in common than she realized. She cried while listening to me talk about my depression, eating disorder, and being arrested. Note, again, I write about my teenage struggles and my depression and my eating disorder and my arrest in my book, Think Differently to Achieve Success. You can download a complimentary copy by visiting my website, kevincsnyder.com. Sitting there with Karen, I realized I was connecting with a complete stranger and helping her through a very dark time in her life. And best of all, Karen agreed to talk with a professional counselor when she got back to campus. Karen and I have kept in touch since that day. In fact, she is aware of my dedication to her in this book. The dedication is always the first portion of every book I write. It anchors me to why the book is being written. Karen earned her master's degree in psychology and is now a college counselor. I will not be surprised to hear she becomes a dean of students or vice president of student affairs one day in the future. Perhaps she might just even be a keynote speaker. After my conversation with Karen in the lobby, there was a closing session to conclude the conference and send all attendees on their way back home. I walked inside the ballroom and took my seat at a table with my students. One of my students immediately shouted out, "The Price is Right guy!" We all laughed. My own students had somehow heard of my new nickname and were happy to let me know they would carry it back home to our campus as well. Lunch began and several awards were given out. One of the awards was Best Presentation, which recognized the highest evaluated session from over 150 other breakout sessions at the conference. I didn't even know such an award existed. The Best Presentation Award goes to Kevin Snyder. Kevin, please come to the stage to receive your award. My students all jumped to their feet as I sat there in disbelief. I felt numb as I walked toward the front of the conference room and onto that stage. But once I stepped onto that main stage in front of 1,000 people in the audience, it felt natural. And as the MC and I shook hands and smiled for the camera, I remember feeling a sense of connection to the stage, the lights, and the people in front of me. Walking through the audience and sitting back down at my table, my students patted my back and put their arms around me. They were just as surprised as I was about the award, which I passed around to them. When the award came back full circle to me, I held it in my lap, mesmerized by the Best Presentation Award in laser etching. After all the awards had been given out, the MC announced, "Before we conclude our conference, it is my privilege to introduce our closing keynote speaker." "Awesome," I thought, "another keynote speaker." Whereas most people would be gritting their teeth, wanting to leave, I was ecstatic about hearing from another keynote speaker. If they were anything like Zig Ziglar, the opening speaker, we were in for an incredible treat. I was already rooting for them even before they began speaking. Unfortunately, though, this closing speaker was nothing like Zig. In fact, they were absolutely horrible. They did nothing interactive during the presentation, spoke about themselves quite a bit, had no audience laughter, used bullet-pointed presentation slides, and actually shared an inappropriate joke that offended many people in the audience. Within the first 15 minutes, that internal voice inside my head started saying to me, "You can do this, Kevin. You can do this better." Zig Ziglar helped instill the desire of me wanting to be a professional speaker, and the closing speaker instilled the belief that I could be a professional speaker. You've probably had a similar experience watching a great speaker and then watching a not-so-great speaker. By watching speakers, I learn a lot about what to do and what not to do. Both realizations would serve to be extremely important in my speaking journey and developing my speaking business. Desire for speaking is not enough. You must also have high levels of self-efficacy and belief that you can do it. Those beliefs will ultimately provide the grit for you to do what is required to make your vision of speaking a reality. Because like purpose, when your desire and passion for something are greater than any adversity you face, you will be successful. Passion fuels purpose. When I returned home from that conference, I proudly displayed my Best Presentation Award in my office next to my picture with Zig Ziglar. As excited as I was also overwhelmed with mixed emotions. I knew there was something inside me that connected to speaking, but I was still unsure what it all meant. My career was in student affairs, not in speaking. So why was speaking pulling me towards it so strongly? Should I pursue speaking? Could I pursue speaking and still work my day job? Where do I even start? I had a great speech at the conference, but am I really that good, or was I just lucky? As my mind raced with all types of questions I did not know the answers to, I remember feeling excited about the idea of at least further exploring speaking with more seriousness and commitment. I began by writing notes down from the recommendations given to me by Zig Ziglar. After a few pages, I was surprised remembering so much of what he had shared with me in a very short period of time. I also went to the local Barnes & Noble and looked for books on becoming a professional speaker. Cannot find any, so I bought several books on public speaking. I began reading those books instantly and taking notes. The energy that filled my chest while reading them felt incredibly good. As I worked through the book content and reflected on my own situation and goals for myself, I ultimately found clarity in what type of speaker I wanted to be like and what I wanted to achieve through speaking. Note, you'll experience the same by working through module 1 of this book. At that time in my life, my goals for speaking were not to quit my day job as a director of orientation. Rather, speaking was something fun and passionate for me to do on the side while I still worked a full-time job in student affairs. My ultimate professional goal was to be a dean of students. Speaking was just something new and exhilarating that made me come alive in ways I had never experienced before. Some of my friends worked side jobs on the weekends to make extra money. I decided to do the same, but in my own way through college speaking. I thought, why work at Bed Bath & Beyond or be a bartender on the weekends when I can speak instead, help people, and get paid a lot more money doing it? And because I would bring in speakers to my campus and present for my students, I knew the types of specific events where colleges hired speakers. I knew how to find those events. I knew how to find those events, who to outreach to, and how to outreach to them. I also knew what speakers charged for a speaking fee. The speakers I would hire for my student events charged $3,500 to $5,000 per speech. So if I even came close to speaking at half that fee just one or two times a month, I would be making as much money through speaking, if not more, than I would compared to an entire month's salary in my full-time day job. But as you hear that, please remember that although potentially lucrative, money was not the primary motivator that got me into speaking. It should not be for you either. The way that I looked at it was that money was a byproduct of me being successful in speaking and sharing my message with students. If I was successful getting in front of student audiences, then the money would follow. So finishing my public speaking books and preparing for my first paid keynote presentation at Mike's campus event on Saturday, June 2nd, 2001, I wrote an outline. I scripted out my entire speech. I joined a Toastmasters organization, and I practiced segments of my speech with my own students on the campus where I worked. When June 2nd arrived for my first professional speech, I was just as terrified as I was excited. Nerves had hit me. I remember feeling the pounding of my heart and the moisture from the palms of my hands. As much as I thought I had prepared, it still wasn't enough. Or perhaps more likely, I didn't prepare in the correct ways. In front of 200 students, I remember losing my train of thought constantly and feeling like everything was going wrong. The only portion of my presentation that seemed to go right with the student audience was my segment of The Price is Right. They loved hearing that story more than I ever expected. In fact, I felt like a stand-up comedian sharing the story and then a true motivational speaker when I connected my dream of winning on The Price is Right to them by asking, "What's your dream? What's your Price is Right?" Sitting down after the keynote speech was over, I remember thinking to myself, well, that didn't go so well. I have a lot of work to do. Surprisingly, Mike approached me afterward and congratulated me. "Well done, Kevin," he says. "I know this was your first real speaking engagement, and I think you did a great job." "Well, thank you, Mike," I paused. "Is there a but?" I smiled with hesitation. "Well, depends what your goals are and how serious you really are about speaking. Since you mentioned wanting to speak to colleges more often, there are some things to be aware of. You're going to have a lot of competition and you're going to experience tougher audiences than the one you had today. So I can help you. I spoke for over 10 years and would be happy to mentor you if that's of interest." "Help me? Mentor me? I'd be honored," I said. "I didn't know you had so much speaking experience." "Well, I'm glad you didn't know, but now you do. And if you're committed to speaking, I will help. Your Price is Right story is one of the best I've ever heard. It has all the elements of an extraordinary speech. I see something in you. How about I take you to dinner tonight and we start talking about it all?" "Thank you, Mike," I said. "I'm so grateful to you for seeing something in me." "You have it, so we just need to figure out what it is. It's not going to be easy, but it'll be worth it if you work hard enough and are coachable. See you in about 2 hours for dinner." "I'm coachable, I promise," I said to Mike. We'll see, he responded, smiling. That night during dinner, Mike sat down with me for several hours to talk about the speaking business, his experience speaking, and his recommendations for me starting off. We stayed at the restaurant until closing time. Mike came into my life at the perfect time and provided me with beginning tips and recommendations that I would otherwise only have learned the hard way by making mistakes. He helped me understand the difference between speaking as a hobby and speaking as a business. I knew nothing about how to actually start a speaking business. I knew nothing about how to find consistent speaking opportunities, how to charge, when to charge, how to promote myself, etc. I knew nothing about real professional speaking until I met Mike. Good news for you is that, similar to Zig's advice for me, a lot of what Mike shared with me over dinner that night and throughout the following year is inside this book. Mike helped me refine my program description, tighten up my actual outline, identify which college groups were the best fit for my program, and how to best outreach to campuses to get the attention of students and staff so that they knew about me. Mike and I connected monthly for a little over a year. These were the days before smartphones, social media, and texting. After a year, Mike and I started to lose touch. I had just taken a new job as director of advising and had also started writing my first book. Plus, I was already speaking one or two times a month, which kept me busy enough. My plate was full both professionally and personally, and I didn't want to waste Mike's time if I wasn't following through and making progress on his recommendations. Besides, I felt content. But once I took a step back from Mike's coaching, I realized my contentment was disguised as complacency, and the speaking gig inquiries no longer came to me so frequently. I landed 9 paid speaking engagements during the year that Mike was coaching me, and each gig ranged around $2,500 each. The year after Mike's coaching ended, though, I had only 3 speaking engagements. I felt confused and frustrated. My contentment and complacency crushed my budding speaking business, and I turned away one of the greatest speaker coaches someone could ask for. When I reached back out to Mike the following year, he was at a different place in his life too. He was now a senior vice president for a university and had no available time. I'm sorry, Mike said to me, but the good news is that I taught you what I know. You know more than you think you do, Kevin. Your main challenge is holding yourself accountable to do what you already know to do. Mike was exactly correct. Accountability was my biggest issue and was exactly what I struggled with most. When I felt distracted in the past, Mike would help me stay on course and focus. Despite feeling disappointed about not having Mike as my coach any longer, I opened my folder of speaking notes that Mike had helped me with the year prior. I reviewed every page from every discussion he and I ever had. This time, though, I wanted to make speaking a top priority. A few months later, I had several speaking engagements on the calendar. That next year, I totaled 8 speaking engagements. I had 12 speaking engagements the year after that. This time, it felt different. Not only was I spreading my powerful message and helping students across the country, but I was getting paid to do it. I was now making more money in part-time speaking than I did in my full-time day job. I used every sick day and personal leave day to go speak somewhere. Luckily, I had a supervisor and a dean who believed in me, supported me in speaking, and provided flexibility for me when needed. When I wasn't speaking, though, I was back at the office working 10, 12-hour days to catch up. I was also still writing my book and exploring a doctorate program. I'm not sure how I kept it all together, but passion and purpose were the glue that binded everything and provided the motivation sources I needed to press onward when tired. Earlier the following year, I reached out to Campus Speak, a collegiate speakers bureau. I applied to be on their speaking roster and was humbled to be selected. Later that same year, I also had finally finished my book and found an editor and a publisher. I had also applied for and started a doctorate program in Student Affairs Administration. The following year, I had become Campus Speak's new Speaker of the Year. A year after that, I was a top 5 speaker and on track to be one of their top speakers on the entire speaking roster. I felt like I was living a dream again, maxing out speaking roughly 15 to 20 times a year while also achieving a variety of other personal and professional goals. 1 month after I finished my doctorate program and walked across the graduation stage, I spoke at a campus called High Point University. As I was doing my typical research on the university in advance of my speaking, I remember thinking High Point was a special place. When I was on campus, I felt a special connection. I had spoken at about 150 campuses before then, but none had the energy and atmosphere that High Point did. After my presentation, several students approached me and told me about their Dean of Students position being open. They recommended that I apply. Even though I felt completely unprepared to be a Dean of Students at just 34 years old, the job description was actually perfect for me. The position was responsible for all the student affairs positions I had previously worked in. It seemed like a perfect fit if they could overlook my young age. So despite expecting a rejection letter due to green experience, I still applied. Less than 1 week later, I received a phone call from High Point to set up a phone interview. Although ecstatic, I was terrified. I assumed that once they realized my age, they would move on to another applicant with more experience. The first phone interview must have gone extremely well, because they flew me to campus for an interview. The on-campus interview must also have gone well because they invited me back to campus to solely meet with the university president, Dr. Nito Quibane. If you know much about professional speaking or High Point University, then you likely have also heard about Dr. Nito Quibane, or vice versa. He is an amazing Hall of Fame professional speaker who has earned top honors and recognition throughout the National Speakers Association. So as you can imagine, I was both terrified and thrilled to meet with him. This short 30-minute interview would be the most important conversation of my life. In preparation for my interview with Dr. Quibane, I read several of his books, watched his videos, and anticipated the ultimate interview test. My interview with Dr. Quibane was fascinating. He was and is still a truly exceptional person with an aura that exudes charisma, personality, and suave. When I walked into his office, I felt like I was in the Oval Office with the President of the United States. I was unsure if he knew anything about my own speaking. Part of me hoped he did, so that we could talk about speaking. However, another part of me hoped he did not, because I didn't want to appear like an amateur in front of him, or more importantly, have him question my commitment to being his Dean of Students. Since he was a university president and spoke professionally, commanding fees of $50,000 plus per speech, then I felt I had nothing to hide. I was the young Jedi and he was the experienced and respected Yoda. Dr. Quibane did bring speaking up during my interview and asked how I planned to balance both if selected as the dean. I had planned for that question, so my response was, "Well, Dr. Quibane, both student affairs and speaking are passions of mine. I've been fortunate to be able to do both. However, student affairs is my career. Speaking is not. Being the Dean of Students for High Point University is and would be my top priority, period." My response must have been more than satisfying. I didn't directly answer his question, and he didn't push me on whether I would give up speaking to be the Dean of Students. A few days later, I received a phone call with the official invitation to be the Dean of Students for High Point University. I graciously accepted and began working out the logistics of moving from Florida back to my home state of North Carolina. I felt dots being connected and stars aligning like never before. I felt so blessed and humbled. When I received the official hiring paperwork in the mail, though, I noticed a condition that I did not expect. In writing, this condition was that I no longer speak. Being the Dean of Students had to not only be my top priority, but also my only priority. Although I was taken back by this requirement and spoke with my hiring manager about it to take the job, I ultimately signed the paperwork. I felt if I pushed the issue and tried to negotiate speaking in any way, they might retract their offer. So I gave up my speaking to become the Dean of Students at High Point University. Giving up my speaking business to take the dean position was not a mistake. However, giving up speaking, which I had built over several years and loved, eventually made me realize how much I missed it. Looking back, I had convinced myself that my mantra of student affairs is my career, not speaking, sounded better to others than how it sounded to me. I was trying to convince myself more than anyone else. Long story short, being the dean of students at High Point was an extraordinary opportunity. I knew being a young, green dean, I had a lot to learn. I did the best I possibly could that first year, but it was tough. The far majority of my work was managing serious conflicts, putting out metaphorical fires, and leading a team of 17 staff members overseeing an entire student life division. I put up with anything that came my way, hoping it would make me a stronger and a better future dean. Besides, doesn't every job have its stressors and complicated issues? Of course it does. During that first year as a dean, I also received speaking inquiries. However, I had to turn them all down and refer them to other speakers. I was even asked to keynote at conferences I'd only dreamed about before I retired my speaking. Not keynoting these events was literally painful, and every time I was contacted about speaking, I felt as if it was a reminder that something greater than me was calling my name. I didn't understand at the time, but speaking was trying to get my attention. Everything changed one morning. My mom called, crying, to share that my sister had been diagnosed with breast cancer. My sister was just 31 years old with two young kids. I was just as shocked as I was in disbelief. She seemed healthy. She was a teacher and took care of herself and her family. This wasn't fair. On my way to work that morning, I made a decision that something needed to change for me too. Life is too short to deal with more stress than happiness. Life is too short not to be able to pursue your dreams and explore your passions. I committed that morning to resign my role as the dean of students to go back into speaking. I began my exit strategy to resign my day job in order to live my real dream job. I gave myself 3 months before submitting my resignation. During those 3 months, I constantly doubted myself and I wondered if I was making the right decision. I did more soul searching, reflecting, and praying than I'd ever done in my life. Every time I considered staying at High Point, I felt conflicted. However, every time I envisioned myself speaking full-time professionally and being my own boss, there was no conflict whatsoever. Speaking felt right. Was it risky? Yes. In fact, even perhaps a bit crazy. I was leaving familiar waters to enter waters of uncertainty. However, I knew I was being called for something greater in my life, and I could no longer ignore it. On January 2nd, 2012, I burnt my metaphorical boat on the island of professional speaking by submitting my resignation as the dean of students. There was no retreat back into familiar waters now. I was going to sail to my own destination and risk losing sight of the shore. I stayed at High Point through February to help with transition issues and finish up projects I had been working on. I also spent every extra waking moment quietly working on my speaking business. I did not tell anyone what I was doing. When they asked, I just replied, "I'm pursuing other opportunities." I'm sure this response aggravated some and confused others, if not both. And during those 3 months of exit strategy preparation, I did land some speaking engagements, but most were quick pro bono freebies. I needed paid speaking engagements, and most of these were booked out months in advance. Although I had some collegiate experience speaking to fall back on, speaking full-time was a different ballgame. I had been speaking for fun, but now I was going to be speaking for real. Meaning the stakes were much higher and I had to treat speaking like a business. No longer could I treat my speaking like a hobby. Yes, I had significant success after 4 years as a part-time college speaker, but those achievement fruits required several years to grow from seeds. I didn't have several years to wait this time. That first year of speaking, I floundered. I nearly quit several times. I felt pressure to be successful, I had bills to pay, and I no longer had a safety net salary. I remember traveling to speak at one of my pro bono freebie speaking engagements with a group of human resource professionals. My credit card was maxed out, and all I had was $22 in my bank account, which was not enough money to pay for gas and return home. I thought to myself, all I need to do is sell 2 books and I'll have gas money to get home. I kept saying this to myself even during the presentation. After the presentation, people applauded and thanked me, but only one person bought a book. This meant I didn't have enough money to even drive home. As I sat inside my car in the parking lot, I just cried. Not only was I unable to pay next month's rent or afford groceries, but I couldn't even afford gas to drive home. I felt like a total failure. Once I stopped crying a few moments later, I reached across the seat and opened a small gift bag that the group had given me as a thank you for speaking. I could tell there was a t-shirt and mug inside the bag, so I hadn't bothered to look inside it yet. I pulled out the t-shirt and mug. Whoopee, I thought. This doesn't get me home. Then I noticed there was something else inside the bag. It was a small card. As I opened the card, I started crying again. Inside the card was a $50 gasoline gift card. I just sat there in amazement, trying to control myself. After a few minutes, I started smiling. Then I said out loud, "Okay, big guy," looking up to the sky, "you've got my attention again. But is this a sign or is this a test or both? Unless you want me to be one of the most educated bartenders out there, I need some help." That drive home, I reflected on all the hard work and sacrifice I had made in my career. In a prayer, I made a deal that as long as I was provided for, I would not give up speaking. I was never motivated by money to start speaking, so I was not going to let money persuade me not to speak either. I still felt destined to speak, and I felt something was missing in my life when not speaking. I had entrepreneurship blood in me, I wanted to control my own schedule, and I wanted to be my own boss. I knew speaking had the opportunity of being extremely lucrative as well and far beyond any glass ceiling salary. Looking back on that first year of full-time speaking, what really kept me from quitting was commitment to my faith and keeping the end in mind. The vision that I knew I would be successful in speaking, despite not having the success yet, was no different than my vision for being on The Price is Right. Just like I made a decision and committed to my vision of being on The Price is Right, I made a decision and commitment to become a successful professional speaker. I was now in the midst of my own motivational speech and I had to walk my own talk. And although I needed to accelerate my speaking quicker than I had before, I still knew it would not happen overnight. But I also knew I needed something more than hope. I needed strategy. I reached back out to Mike and begged him for some help and coaching. Unfortunately, his situation as vice president still did not provide him any availability. However, he did recommend and encourage me to attend a seminar for professional speakers, which was ironically coming up in a few weeks, just a couple hours away from where I lived. Mike shared with me that this same seminar was what started him off in speaking. Mike said, "The greatest athletes have coaches, Kevin. So if you want to be great at speaking, attend this seminar and ask about coaching with Kirk. I credit Kirk with any success I've ever had. He'll be a great fit for you." Mike was exactly correct. I attended that seminar, met Kirk, and was immediately captivated by him. Kirk did things a bit differently and had this amazing ability to help speakers not only find speaking engagements that could pay, but a proven system for how to outreach to meeting planners and stay in touch. What Kirk provided was what I needed to get to that next level in professional speaking. Problem I had was that I didn't have any extra money. So long story short, I knew I had to ask Kirk to consider customizing a training program for me. "The answer is always no if you don't ask, right?" I said to Kirk. Kirk smiled and responded, "You were paying attention during the seminar." Kirk ended up customizing a special speaker coaching program for me, but it was still outside my budget. I knew he did the best he could, and I knew that I needed his program. But most importantly, I knew that just one speaking engagement would pay for the entire training program and a lifetime of knowledge for a career in speaking. I went home and considered asking my mom and dad for help, but at 34 years old, my pride was in the way. So instead, I contacted my financial advisor. "All that money I've given you and your company," I said to him, "I need $7,500 out immediately, and I don't care about the taxes or penalties." As you can imagine, my advisor did everything in his power to persuade me from taking that money out. but I had no choice not to. And the way I looked at it was that it was my money anyways, and it was making his company more money than it was making me. So with a long-term vision requiring small-term sacrifice, I withdrew that $7,500 and reinvested $5,000 of it in Kirk's speaker coaching program. I would come to find out later that my investment in Kirk's program was a business expense, meaning it was a tax deduction, and so were the taxes I paid on withdrawing the money. So all in all, for me at least, it was a wise decision to reallocate a small portion of my standard retirement and treat it like a true investment in my own speaking business. Important note and disclaimer. Consult your CPA and/or tax advisor before doing what I did and withdraw funds from any retirement account. I am not recommending you do what I did necessarily. I'm simply sharing what I did to find a way to make Kirk's speaker coaching program possible for me. You do need to know that most business expenses, such as training and coaching, are also tax deductions. Also, one consideration I've always focused on before any major expense in my speaking business is whether just one speaking engagement should pay for that investment. If the answer is yes, or it should, then it's a no-brainer for me to invest in it. Serious speakers make investments in their speaking because they treat it like a business. One of the quotes Zig Ziglar shared with me was, "Kevin, when you have passion for something, you will find a way to make it happen." I include this story about how I invested in Kirk's speaker coaching program as a testimony to you for how difficult my circumstances were when I started speaking full-time and how I pushed through those circumstances to live my dream of speaking. As I say to my own audiences now, circumstances don't define you, they reveal you. So extraordinary measures are often required to create the circumstances you want. Mike was exactly correct about the power, clarity, and return on investment that Kirk's speaker coaching program would provide for me. It was a ton of work, but within a few coaching calls with Kirk and following his process and guidance, I had narrowed down my corporate keynote speech, had identified my target associations with professional audiences, and had developed outreach strategies to connect with meeting planners. By the end of my 3-month coaching program, I had 11 paid speaking engagements lined up. By the end of the first year, I was asked to keynote at several state associations, and by the middle of the following year, I was asked to be a keynote speaker at the National Association Conference in between Daniel Pink and Hillary Clinton. The year after that, I was appreciating 6-figure speaking results. I don't write that to impress you. Rather, I write that to impress upon you that having a proven speaking strategy and following that blueprint is what professional speakers do who operate a successful speaking business. It's not easy, and most speakers who are just interested in speaking will, respectfully, never make it as a professional speaker. But if you're committed to results, if you're passionate about your message, and you're coachable to following a proven roadmap, then success is replicable. My results should be no different than yours if you do what I've done and if you do what Kirk did. I do believe that success leaves clues. Kirk is no longer with us, so I've outlined in this book some of the most valuable portions from his speaker coaching program. But with his permission, I was able to tweak it and make it my own for you. My own speaker coaching programs are also similar to what Kirk provided me. You can view them at paidtospeak.biz. I customize my speaker coaching like Kirk did for me. As a reminder, if you'd like my review of your materials while working through this book, or if you need some help, simply reach out. I don't work with every speaker, so I encourage you to apply so we can determine if you're a fit. My website provides more details. Since my first keynote speech at Mike's campus on June 2nd, 2001 in Tampa, Florida, I have presented keynotes and leadership programs for over 1 million people through 1,000 audiences plus, spanning all 50 states and several countries. I've spoken at over 400 colleges and universities, as well as hundreds of associations and companies like JetBlue, Anheuser-Busch, TIAA, Sherm, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Toshiba, the United States Air Force, and many, many more. Visit my website and view my client summary, kevincsnyder.com. If you see a client I have previously spoken and you are interested in speaking with them as well, we can talk about this during your coaching call after finishing this book. Because I started speaking to college audiences and evolved into corporate professional speaking, I'm one of the few speakers who understands the collegiate, youth speaking industry, as well as the professional industry. I am also one of the very few speaker coaches who is actually a professional speaker as well. Most coaches out there don't speak professionally, so there's quite a bit of knowledge they do not have. If college audiences or youth audiences are one of your target groups, then the blueprint in this book is just as effective for youth audiences as it is professionals. Note, at the time of this publication, roughly 70% of my current paid professional speaking is with professional audiences, and the remaining 30% is with college and high school groups and organizations. Sharing my journey and story with you about how I started as a speaker is important because you likely connect with different aspects of it. My journey wasn't pretty, and although I had a passionate vision and desire, there were still many times I wanted to quit and nearly did. I figured out most of the speaking business the hard and long way, which is why I wrote this book to help hungry, aspiring speakers like you. You'll benefit from knowing what Zig Ziglar shared with me, what Mike taught me, and what Kirk showed me. You can do it alone and figure it out the hard way, but you don't need to. I'm here to help. So here are some points to remember. What's your story? How do you want to help people? Treat your speaking like a hobby, and you'll earn a hobby income. Treat your speaking like a business, you'll earn a business income. You don't need to quit your day job to be a professional speaker, but imagine if you could. In order to truly live your dream job, at some point you'll need to let go of the day job. Are you calling speaking, or is speaking calling you? If any investment in your speaking business could pay for itself, then do it. Any investment in a speaking business should be a business expense. Circumstances don't define you, they reveal you. Extraordinary measures are often required to create the circumstances you want.